the weight didn't get put on fast, it's not going to come off fast. You can't start fast. You're not going to run a marathon after a week's worth of training. That's impossible.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with another edition of the Wadapalooza podcast, and I am joined by the lovely Anne Powers. Anne, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Dylan.
So Anne is one of the folks you've probably seen in some of our marketing material for the Wadapalooza Transformation Challenge, and she is your weekly source of inspiration for all of you participating out there. How do you feel about that, Anne?
That's super awesome. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Awesome. So Anne has a transformation story of her own that I think is unbelievable, outstanding, and again, I don't think there could be any better source of inspiration for you all back home working through your own 60 days and hopefully well beyond that will turn into your 120 days, your year, your 2 years, and 3 years. But I want to jump right into some questions here, Anne. Again, thank you for joining us. Let's talk a little bit about your journey. Why don't you introduce yourself beyond the pictures that they've seen? Talk a little bit about yourself and your transformation journey.
Okay, Dylan. Well, in 2005, I decided that I needed to make a choice. I had a hard time breathing. I had asthma. The only way I could breathe comfortably is putting my hands over my head. It's just lifting up the rib cage.
So that was normal. That was like an everyday life. Like when you wake up every morning sitting down, you couldn't breathe.
Yeah, it was just I had a hard time breathing. I had, you know, several different problems. My knees hurt, my back hurt, I had a hard time sleeping. And I went to the doctor and they said, you know, you really need to lose some weight. I was 310 pounds.
310, wow.
That was my heaviest weight. And he suggested a weight loss program at the hospital.
Okay.
And you would be monitored. You started off with a full set of labs. And you would be monitored every week. You'd go in and get weighed. You meet with a psychologist. You know, was it something, you know, in the back of your brain that was causing you to eat so much? You met with a nutritionist. You met with a nurse. You met with a doctor. You met with everybody and made sure that you kept on track.
So as far as that, maybe you're going to get into it here in a second, but as far as exercise, did they give you direction as far as, it sounds like they're talking to you about the psychology behind it, the nutritional side of it, but what about actual fitness? Did they talk at all about exercising as well?
They did talk a little bit about exercising, but not a lot.
Okay.
What inspired me, however, is my nurse. She ran marathons.
Okay.
And she had run a lot of marathons, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to run a marathon at 310 pounds. I was like, that's my goal.
Did you know walking in there, or was it just in getting to know her that it kind of?
Yeah, just getting to know her and, you know, just talking and becoming friends. And, you know, I saw him every week. So
right.
I started walking and walking and walking. And then I joined her on some of her runs, and she would run and I would walk, and she'd, you know, I'd meet her on the way back and
okay,
we'd walk
gotcha.
Back and and I just kept on going. I kept on losing weight and I kept on walking, and then I slowly started running.
Wow.
And that was in 2005.
So this was how long mm-hmm. did this walk, like when did you start walking? Was it, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after you met with the doctors and
yeah,
how did, how, what was this?
It was quite a while. It was probably about a month before I actually started doing any exercise.
Okay.
But then I started doing the exercise, and it really started to move. The scale, you know,
quickly.
It quickly moved, and I felt better. And the more I lost and the more I exercised, the better I felt. I was sleeping well, and it was able to breathe better.
Did you feel like an instant from, you know, after that first month of walking, did you feel initially like at least a somewhat of an improvement in your breathing? Because I know that was probably the main reason that brought you to the doctor to begin with.
It was a little bit, but because I had been diagnosed with asthma, you know, instead of I was overweight and I couldn't breathe, they
right.
diagnosed it as asthma. I was still relying on those tools for asthma with the inhaler and things like that. But then I slowly started to wean myself off of it because I didn't need it anymore.
Right.
Right? I didn't have that excess weight crowding my lungs and
right,
stuff.
Right, right, right.
So, And then in about 2006, I started doing little 5Ks, you know, here and there.
Wow. How much would you say after that first year, how much did you weigh when you started to run those 5Ks? What was the weight differential?
I think it was probably around 80, 90 pounds maybe.
So like 220, 210-ish, 230-ish. Yep. Cool. Okay, so yep. You lost a significant amount of weight in that first year. 90 pounds is nothing to scoff at. That's awesome.
It was a lot. And so my friend was getting to run the Marine Corps Marathon at that time, and I so wanted to do that. You know, so that was just even more inspiration of what I needed to do. And so she came back from the marathon and she was telling me all about it. And I was like, dude, I'm going to run a marathon. I really am.
You're determined. Was this the nurse?
Yeah.
So you became like very close friends. You had somebody almost like a mentor to you that she became someone you looked up to.
Oh yeah. We hung out all the time.
So cool.
Saturdays we were at the lake running
around
the trail.
No way. How cool is that? Your nurse, from nurse to like to being one of your, is she today? I mean, we can talk about it later, but is she still a friend of yours?
Absolutely.
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yep. And so then in 2007, I did the Marine Corps 10K.
Awesome. Another year later. So another year later, built, that's what you used that year to kind of train.
Yep.
What was the, you used 80 to 90 pounds that first year. What did that next year turn into as you got ready to run?
It slowed down quite a bit, right? Because the first, when you're so heavy, you lose a lot of weight really fast, but then your body starts getting used to it and you really have to start working at it. And so it was slower. So when I did the 10K, I was around 170 pounds.
That's incredible still, though. I mean,
absolutely.
So
yeah.
That was another 40 pounds in the next year. So if you're looking at like a graph here, you know, it obviously spikes up and it starts to even out, you know, starts to get a little bit more straight and less drastic. But another 40 pounds at 170, that's, I mean, was that, so okay, so go on. You ran in 2007.
Right. I ran in 2007. I did the Marine Corps 10K.
So
and
cool.
Then, and my friend did the marathon. And I said, next year, next year's my year. And I did. And I ran the marathon.
The following year. Mm-hmm. Was there, now how about that? Well, you're at 170. 170 is, again, probably compared to 310, it's almost half your body. You cut half your weight.
Absolutely, yeah. And so in my marathon weight, I was 165 pounds.
Great.
And it was awesome. That year, Georgetown University was doing a study on how running affects your blood pressure and everything like that. And I signed up for the study. I was signing up for everything. And they were just amazed at just, you know, everything, my blood pressure. And I was you should have seen my labs before.
You didn't get a chance to give them to them from your previous doctors?
No, but they were just like, this is great.
310.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was awesome. So I did the marathon. Then I didn't want to be a one and done. So I did the next year.
2009. Okay, yeah.
The next year.
Did your time improve from one year to the next?
It did, yeah.
So awesome. What was your time that second year? Do you remember your times on those?
It's like 5:45, and it's not fast.
No, but compared to where you came, that's amazing.
Upright and smiling.
26 plus miles. That's unbelievable. Coming from 310.
Oh yeah, and the Marine Corps Marathon, the last 0.2 miles is uphill.
No.
And so you have, it's lined with Marines.
That sounds gross.
And they're yelling at you, saying, get up that hill, get up.
Sounds gross.
And so you just haul up that hill, and then you look, and it's like, oh, man, the finish line is way down there.
Did you guys not see the first 26 miles I ran? Why are you waiting here now? Yeah. I just busted my butt. You're going to scream at me, these 0.2?
Yeah, but it was so cool.
That is so awesome. So then 2009, so then from there, let's continue on. Two full marathons. Let's continue. So now, you know, we're in 2016. There's 7 year, or, you know, a 6-7 year gap there. What happened after that?
So I kept running, kept doing little marathons, half marathons here and there. There was always, every Christmas there was a half marathon on a Saturday. But then on a Sunday, there was a half marathon that I like to do. So it was a back-to-back half marathon.
Oh.
And it was in North Carolina.
Basically.
So it's just up and down hills.
You're looking
at the hill that you're going to run up when you're running down. So I mean, it's just up and down.
We're not. So if you guys do not know, I'm sure most of you listening back home do, but we are based here in Miami. It's as flat as can be at sea level. No hills whatsoever unless you go out. You've got to really seek to find even a little hill.
Yeah, you have to run over the turnpike or
something. Yeah, exactly. Right. Or Biscayne Bridge or something. Yeah.
Right.
Or Key Biscayne Bridge. But, yep, not many here. So up and down. So that's pretty much a marathon every year again. So you're pretty much training for 2 weekends, which ended up adding up to be a marathon.
Yep. I did the Austin half marathon. which was a lot of fun.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
So, and then I moved to Miami.
Uh-huh.
And did the Disney, did the princess, and I did the, who's the, Tinkerbell.
Oh, another one in yeah,
yeah,
Disney,
I did
cool.
The Tinkerbell, and those were all half marathons. But then I said, you know what, I'm going to do the Goofy. And the Goofy is a half marathon on Saturday and a full marathon on Sunday.
Oh.
If I wasn't crazy enough.
You are, yeah, you're a nutcase at that point,
yeah,
but
so that's
but good nutcase.
39.3
oh,
miles in a
man.
Weekend.
Oh, man. Oh, that's a lot of mileage for sure. For somebody yeah. in a 2 week month period, that somebody that runs quite a lot, 39 miles in 2 days is brutal.
Yeah, it was probably one of the hottest Januaries in Florida.
In Orlando,
it
yeah.
It was super hot. It was like 80 degrees. It was hot. It was really hot.
I'm sure people out there can, if you've been to Wodapalooza, you can somewhat relate to that in January, that nasty weather.
Yeah. No rain, though.
Oh, that's good. Yep. No Friday. Please, Wodapalooza, stay away, stay away, stay away.
It
you've experienced
awesome.
It. So.
Yeah. But anyway, so I did the Goofy, and then I had a week off because I was working Wodapalooza that year.
Oh, this is like around the beginning of
yeah,
Wodapalooza.
Yeah, it was like the second Wodapalooza.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How
and
cool is that?
And then the
we're
next
closer.
Weekend was the ING Miami Marathon.
Oh, no. Don't tell me where you're going with this.
And I did that, too.
Oh, geez. I shouldn't have been surprised, but I am surprised.
The thing is that, you know, when I was training for the Goofy, I was running quite a bit of miles. I had, you know, put a lot of miles in to
yeah.
train 50 to 80 miles a week.
Wow.
And my foot was hurting quite a bit.
So what exactly, at the bottom of your
yeah,
bottom?
My heel, and everybody said, oh, it's just, you know, plantar fascia and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And I did the ING Miami, and about mile 10, I was just like, my foot is just killing me. I don't know if I can finish. So the ING Miami, they give you the option, if you're doing the full, you can turn off and do the half.
Gotcha.
So I turned off and I did the half. And, you know, I took some time off, and I just thought it was all the miles I was putting in.
Yeah, you're putting in
like
a lot.
That.
Heck yeah.
And I went back to CrossFit, and I was running in place, and I heard a pop, and my fascia just ruptured.
On the bottom of your foot.
Yeah. And I was out. I was out for the count.
Wow. How long? So now, I mean, again, we'll continue on with the story, but... So how long did that keep you out for? What was the prognosis?
So I was out for a couple weeks. I just took it off, and I went to a doctor, and they took an MRI, and they said, yeah, it's ruptured everything. They can give you a cortisone shot. And I was like, yeah, you know, I don't know if I really want a cortisone shot. So I went to another doctor, and, you know, he said, no, let's not do a cortisone shot. We're just going to put you in boot for 6 weeks.
Okay.
And we're going to treat it like as if we had given you surgery. So you've already ruptured it, so that's the same thing we were going to do anyway.
Right.
And so we're going to treat it as you had surgery, so you're going to spend 6 weeks in the boot and do rehab. So I spent 6 weeks in the boot and did rehab. And unfortunately, I didn't stop eating as if I was still running the 50
right,
to 80
right,
miles.
Right. Yeah, so you were eating as if you were trying yep. to fuel this running machine.
That wasn't running anymore.
Oh, for a long time, for 6 weeks. So how did that mentally, when you were kind of taken out from your love, which was fitness, running, how did that affect you mentally? How did that, obviously you were hurt physically, but.
It was tough. It was tough not being able to do anything. It was tough to, when I was at the box and I was stuck on the rower. Where everybody was jumping and lifting weights and running.
Right.
I was stuck on a rower, rowing with one foot on a ball so I could move it back and forth.
Well, at least you didn't let that stop you. You were still moving, so I actually didn't realize. I thought you were completely out of commission, but you did make sure you moved a little bit.
Yeah, I still made sure I moved, but I didn't want to make one side stronger than the other.
Okay.
So, you know, I did a lot of arm movements, but... Very little leg movements.
So you weren't really able to, would you say, is it fair to say you weren't really able to get the cardiovascular
yeah.
training and
no, not at,
get
not
your heart
at
rate
all.
Up as much as you would have liked?
Yeah, I became really good at rowing.
Yeah, an excellent rower, an excellent one-legged rower to be,
exactly.
to be specific, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I wasn't getting the cardio that, not half of what I was getting before.
Okay, so that was back in 2013.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So from there, so the 6 weeks, I mean, I know you mentioned that you've hit, you know, I think the story goes on because we've had 3 years. You've from there, did you start to put weight back on? You said you continued eating or?
Yeah, I put weight back on and, you know, I started creeping up there slowly. You know, it doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And it started creeping up. And I had, you know, now I'm back into training, but I wasn't full force into training. I'm still scared that something's going to bust.
With your foot specifically?
Yeah.
Okay.
And finally, one of my coaches says, you know, enough is enough. Let's get you moving again. And then we had our challenge here, our challenge here
recently
at the box.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? This is the perfect motivation that I need to get back down to marathon weight.
And
which is 165.
Gotcha. So where are you at now? Where were you at when you pre-challenge, when you felt like you had?
Pre-challenge, I was at 189. And after challenge, I was at 178.
Wow. So another 12 pounds, and it was a 60-day challenge, right? 60
days? Yeah, 60-day challenge. And I'm 10 pounds away from marathon weight. I'm 10 pounds away from the 165, so can't wait to get there.
Almost there. How's your foot feeling now?
The foot feels great. I actually did a half marathon in Raleigh, another
great.
North Carolina,
yeah,
up and down hills, in the 1st of April.
Awesome.
So that was my first race since my injury.
And that was like the start of the challenge as well here, kind of right around that time.
Yeah, it was right around that time. So
So I mean, you told me this injury happened back in 2013. So for the next, even though they only had you in the boot for 6 weeks, you were kind of afraid to really pick up the running volume for another almost 2 years. Is that right?
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't want to re-injure myself. I had got out of the boot and I started exercising again and it started to hurt again.
So gotcha. Hey, take it easy again.
Take it easy. So I
How
take
frustrating.
It easy, and then you start again, and then it starts to hurt again. You take it easy. And
so frustrating.
So it's back and forth and back and forth. So, I mean, when they tell you to rest, rest.
Rest, yes, absolutely. No matter what, I think that's one definite takeaway.
You got to listen to your body.
Yep, abso-freaking-lutely, 100%. So I think that story in itself is amazingly inspiring. Again, going from 310 getting all the way down to 165, hitting a little bit of a roadblock with an injury, but she didn't let that stop her. She continued on training in the gym, and I want to talk a little bit more about the start, how you got into CrossFit, because I know you were running quite a bit, and that seemed to become your passion. But before that, I want to go to the very beginning. So prior to you even getting into the doctor's office, when you were 310 and you had a trouble breathing, we have a lot of people that are doing this challenge that honestly have zero experience with fitness, with exercise, with getting fit. We didn't expect that to be the demographic that would participate in this, because Wodapalooza is notorious for being a fitness festival. People are already very involved with CrossFit. But when we looked at these people's before and after pictures and the weight and their height, a lot of them are tended to be very, very overweight. And in their little, there's a little section on their profile to put their story. I've read quite a number of people that have lived very sedentary lifestyle. So just to kind of relate them to you, I mean, obviously to get to 310, you mentioned it as you hit that roadblock that it slowly starts to creep up. What was your lifestyle like prior to going to the doctor? What was your day-to-day like that you think got you to that point?
Oh, man. I mean, I worked, you know, what got me to the point is that I was working and I was flying for work. I was traveling overseas. And do you know how embarrassing it is to have to ask for the seat extender and to have to wait until after they give the demo of how to put your seatbelt on the plane, and then to come up in front of everybody and make a point of them handing you the seat extender? And that is, and I flew a lot.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, how often, like twice,
you know,
a week or once a week?
For 3 years, I was 2 weeks stateside and I was 2 weeks overseas.
Wow.
And it's not just, you know, flying from here to, you know, cross country or something. It's here to Europe.
Yeah. Oh,
and
you gotta share.
That is a miserable experience to go through, have anybody to go through. It's just, and to be so rude about it and not have any kind of, you know, kind of just making fun of you, saying, hey, look at the fat person that needs the seat extender. So it wasn't fun.
That is not cool by any means.
Yeah, but, you know, I had nothing. I didn't exercise and I didn't do anything.
Because you're on the road so much, it
was
tough to.
I was on the road. I ate out all the time. I didn't, you know, I didn't even walk upstairs. If the elevator was broke, I would wait.
You would wait for the elevator to get, hey, I'm going to stay downstairs until that dang elevator's fixed or it gets down here.
And, you know, one of my good friends, I was at a conference and the elevator was broke. And she goes, oh, it's just a couple flights. You know, we can just go up the stairs. And I said, like, do I look like I walk upstairs?
Oh, wow.
And that's terrible to even make an excuse for it, you know.
Right.
And she gives me a hard time about it every day because now I take the stairs over anything.
That's awesome. I'm glad you've come that far and come to that realization. What about as far as, so you said your eating habits, were you eating, what types of things other than eating out? Were you a soda drinker? What are some of the things, what were some of like your guilty pleasures that you'd consider?
Well, I love to bake.
Okay.
I love to bake.
Oh, you showed me the cookies earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they're right here.
Oh, you got it yet for Team Peak. That's awesome.
But, you know, I love to bake breads and cookies. I don't like to cook. I like to bake.
Gotcha.
So it's the, you know, heavy gluten stuff. And soda, I drank soda all the time. It wasn't good. It wasn't good food. And then eating out, of course.
Oh, yeah, right
away.
All
the heavy stuff. And the desserts and
when you're especially when you're out of the country, you know, some of those international
the
best.
I mean, if there's one restaurant we went to and you get sit down and you get a loaf of potato bread with crackling and sausage gravy.
You're making me hungry, and that is not a good thing, especially those of you listening. I apologize in advance because you guys are mid-challenge, and those are the things you're more than likely staying completely away from. We're trying to relate with you, but yeah, I could see why that would be tough when you travel.
And it's hard when you travel, but now when I travel, I know I can make better choices. There's everything out there you can make better choices. Get it without a sauce. Get it without, you know, don't bread things. Don't do any of that.
Little tips, little things that can make a big difference.
Even just eat half of what you're served because the portions are so huge.
Right.
Just eat half.
Yeah, so you've learned to make those right choices, and I think all in all, they made a huge difference. You've come such a long way, and I also want to point out that I think, I mean, you can tell me, you told me your inspiration was, for one, the story you just told me of almost being ridiculed on flights, which should never happen to anyone regardless, but I think also the fact that you found running and the running kind of became your outlet. Was it more of like a mental, a physical thing? Like, well, I mean, did you enjoy running? I mean, what was your...
There's nothing like hitting the street and running outside. And even now I keep clothes and shoes at work. And if I have a tough day or if it's just, you know, just not going right, I'll just get up from my desk, go to the gym, change my clothes and go for a little run. And it's just... There's just nothing like it. It clears your head. It's just you and the road.
That's great. Then on that same note, I want to ask you, because just to be a little more specific, especially for those people that are at home that are maybe saying, you know what, I'm not really into functional fitness. I'm not into doing, you know, going to a CrossFit affiliate and doing that stuff. I kind of want to start off the same way that Ann started off. You know, I'm overweight and I want to walk. How many days a week? What? Kind of paint a little more vivid picture of what those like distances or how much you were walking each week and then how it progressed. Maybe give them they can map out on their own a little loose training plan of walking, borderline to jogging, then to running as they get a little further along.
Yeah, I mean, I started out with just walking 15 minutes a day.
For how many days a week
Every
would you
day.
Say? Okay.
Every day, 15 minutes.
Just walking.
Yep. And when I came home from work, instead of driving to the mailbox, I parked the car and then walked to the mailbox. I mean, it's just as easy as
little
that.
Little changes.
You know? And then after I did the 15 minutes a day, I would just bump up to 20 minutes a day and then 30 minutes a day. And then you just walk and walk and walk. And you can't start out fast. I mean, just like the weight didn't get put on fast, it's not going to come off fast. You can't start fast. You're not going to run a marathon after a week's worth of training. That's impossible.
Absolutely. Great analogy, but also great literally as well in your situation.
Yeah. And so you have to start out slow. You have to build up that. You have to build it up. And maybe in your 15 or 30-minute walk, you run from one light pole to the next light pole. And that might be all that you do.
Right. The only little bit of running.
Next time, maybe you run from the first light pole to the third light pole.
Gotcha.
You know?
So little
it's
goals.
Just little things, little goals. And setting those little goals helps you achieve and see your achievements, right? Because if you set a goal and say, okay, I want to run a mile, and you're not even walking 10 minutes, it's kind of setting yourself up for failure.
Yep, absolutely.
So if I say, okay, well, this week I'm going to run from that light pole to that light pole, not stop. And then when you write it down in your logbook and you look back and you say, okay, every day this week I ran from that light pole to that light pole. I hit my goal. And then you set a new goal.
I love that. I love that. And she brings up another thing that we have not talked about is having a freaking logbook or a journal about what your workouts are. I think that's another great tip, right, Ann?
I have journals galore.
Of all your running or just
all
everything?
All my running, everything.
That's so awesome.
I have journals. I know where I ran. I know how much I ran. And I know the mileage on my shoes.
That's great. See, this is what definitely something you need to do, whether it's electronic, whether it's in a book. I've got a little personal notebook that I use for my own working out and also, you know, things I do in everyday life. Were your physical notebooks, is that what you'd recommend getting? Or
I like physical notebooks because I like writing them down and I like, jotting down a note, or maybe I picked up a leaf on my run or something.
And put it in there.
Put it in
there. That's so cool.
You know, and then when I look back, I said, oh, yeah, I remember that tree.
There we
go. That's an awesome tree.
From little journeys, the little things to remember about your running journeys. That's awesome.
I like the paper journal. Some people like doing electronic. It's just all up to you. And I like going back and reading them and seeing where I was.
Seeing your progress. Heck yeah. That's why she's able to recall so well. Again, where she came over the course of years and years and years, she was able to recall the year, you know, the next year when she ran each race. I think that's incredible. I think that's something you all should do listening at home. Take a journal so that you have an idea of where you started. Your beginnings are the most inspirational part of your journeys. And a year from now, you're going to look back at where you started, and it's only going to keep that fire going and help you stay motivated to continue your journey.
Oh, yeah, and it's going to evolve. You know, the first time you're just going to put down a little note, I did this.
Right.
And then, you know, you're going to sit down and you're going to say, okay, well, maybe I need to start tracking this now.
Right. Yeah. I'm putting in my body.
It evolves. It's a process.
Awesome. Well, I love that tip. So journals, 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 guys, it's only going to help you. It cannot hurt you. But on that same note, now I want to kind of transition into the nutritional side. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that when you were at the doctor's and they assigned you every week to this nutritionist, we can talk a little bit about what those changes were that they had you make initially, but I also want to know about the bigger picture, like how you're eating now. So let's start, though, about your time with the doctor. What were the changes that they had you make nutritionally?
Well, this was a prescribed diet. So you had food that they assigned to you, and then you also had a shopping list that they gave you that you had to go out and get.
Assigned food. Would you mind explaining that a little bit further?
So like they give you protein drinks and bars.
Okay, they would
bars.
Give it to you. It's from the hospital. They would.
Well, yeah, you pay for it, but
right. I get you. I understand. Yeah,
right.
Gotta pay the man.
They would give it to you. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And
okay.
So, and then you would do that as a supplement to what your shopping list was, but then you also had your shopping list. So, chicken and fish and lean meats.
So did they cut out carbs? They cut out like greens and.
Right. So it was mainly just protein and vegetables. No sugar.
None.
No sugar. You had to get rid of the sugar.
How tough was that for you to quit sugar cold turkey when you said you drank sodas, you had sweets?
It was tough.
Did you quit cold turkey? Did you do it cold turkey?
I did it cold turkey. I didn't bake anymore. I told everybody, no more baking.
How the heck did you do that? That's incredible.
It was super hard.
Mentally just, whew.
Yeah, because you go through withdrawals. You have super withdrawals. And but you have to just kind of work through it. And I knew I could do it. I used to smoke. And so I was like, if I could quit smoking cold turkey, I could quit sugar cold turkey.
Right.
But it was tough. I'm not going to lie. It was tough.
How long would you say you felt those withdrawals?
I would say it was probably about 2-3 weeks. After a month, it started to wear off.
Of legitimate cravings? When you say withdrawals, what kind of things are you experiencing?
I mean,
just like
intense cravings. I was grumpy. I was sleepy. I mean, I was a bear to be around.
2-3 weeks. Yeah. Oh, geez. So you know what? This is perfect because we're in week 3 right now. Mm-hmm. So if you've been very diligent about cutting out sweets from your diet, the things that your bodies can really kind of establish an addiction for, you're almost through the fire. If you're on Ann's time, and Ann was 310 at the time, and she got done in 2-3 weeks of those, you know, getting those cravings and whatnot out of her body, you'll be good to go if you just stick with it for another half week or a week.
Yep, and you just got to keep telling yourself to you can't. You can't because if you do, you have to start all over again, right? And starting over again is harder than the first time. If you just make it over that hump, you can do it. It's gravy.
For sure. Awesome. So today, you know, that was a prescribed diet. Mm-hmm. How long would you say that you were on that prescribed diet where they were issuing you bars and foods? And
gosh, it was probably about 9 months before I started weaning myself off into regular food. So I still had my shopping list, but I didn't have the protein bars and stuff that they were prescribing to me.
Gotcha.
So I went out and I, you know, got my own protein because it's important, right?
Absolutely.
You need to have protein. And but then I also had my shopping list that I had made up every day that we would go over and say yes or no to.
Right.
And then I would just, I started fixing meals properly.
So you had a shopping list that you would show to the nutritionist, and
yeah,
they would say, you try to like probably sneak a few things on there that you think might, you know, hey, probably borderline, what do you think of this?
Yeah.
And they would tell you yes or no to the item.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and it was a lot of education too, because let's take a salad dressing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's fat-free salad dressing out there.
Right.
It's full of sugar.
Loaded with sugar,
because
yes.
Sugar is fat-free.
Yep.
So, you know, it's really reading and understanding what you're looking at.
Yep. And there's been a lot of, over the last 10 years, you know, misconceptions, again, about fat-free, everything. There was a craze for about 5 to 10 years of everyone needing to get everything fat-free. But you're right. Most fat-free products, folks, something we have not talked about in our literature that we've published for you, is typically loaded with sugar or chemicals. And you know, something to really look for in these fat-free products is high fructose corn syrup. And you'll look under, if you look on the nutritional facts, look under sugar, there's usually, again, in the 20s, if not in the teens or 20s of grams of sugar. So just be wary of that, folks. Very good tip.
Even sugar alcohol.
Yeah, sugar alcohols. Yep, you've got to be aware of those as well.
Yep.
They're also diuretics, a whole other thing, make you go to the bathroom quite a bit, but just keep that in mind.
Yep.
So change your diet. How about today? You know, once you hit that roadblock and you restarted the challenge, what it sounds a lot like what the diet you were doing was almost like a paleo-esque sort of thing.
Yeah, it was paleo-esque. I'd probably say in between paleo and zone, probably.
Okay, so counting your macros a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. But more protein, making sure that, you know, I got in that protein.
With all the running you were doing, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, again, when I started the challenge, I went back to my logbooks.
That's great. Awesome.
I went back to see some of my shopping lists that
I had.
And
that kept you motivated. Yeah.
Over with the nutritionist. And I started doing that again.
That's great. That's awesome. So then now Zone, it seems like you've been sticking to it. You've got 10 pounds left to go. Now that you're back on the bus, we've already been talking for quite some time. I think I just want to close it out with any sort of tips that you would give to someone that is right now beginning, or, you know, maybe they've already started their journey a while ago, but this challenge was the kick in the butt, kind of like it was for you to get back on track. What are some tips, or maybe one major takeaway that you would tell them to think about and focus on over the remaining 5 or 6 weeks and moving forward?
I would say set small goals. Set the small goals that you know you can attain, and then keep on resetting your goals. Of course, you're going to have one big goal of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to set those small goals so you get those little wins. And start learning how to treat yourself to something other than food. And I know a lot of people focus around food, you know, with birthday cake and stuff like that. But find another outlet to treat yourself with. Buy a new pair of shoes. Buy a new pair of socks. Do something else besides eat. And not focus around food.
Gotcha. And I would say it sounds like to me, like running became that for you to some degree. You know,
absolutely,
treating yourself to
yeah.
building up to that. I like that you took a friend of yours that was once your nurse and kind of, it appeared to me almost as if she became your competition. Like you were chasing her. You know, she was running the 10K, you were running the 5K, then she ran the half marathon. You wanted to run the half marathon. She became your motivation for, again, running the full marathons. And I think the things that I took away from Ann's story, for one, that it's super inspirational. Number two, that again, there are little tips and tricks. Number one being, hey, keep a journal. And number two, set small, attainable goals that are not going to overwhelm you or set you up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you can't beat yourself up. If you had a bite of that cake at work or whatever, say, okay, well, I'm starting again. You know,
back on the bus.
Yeah, that was 5 minutes ago, and it's right now. So I'm starting again.
That's,
you can't beat yourself up.
That's awesome. So for those of you at home that maybe have had a hiccup or still early on, it's not too late to get back on and get back into the zone of this 60-day transformation challenge. And I want to thank you so freaking much for joining us. I think it's going to be of tremendous value to all of our participants.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Awesome. Well, all right, guys, that is it. Another episode of the Wadapalooza Podcast Transformation Challenge Edition. Miss Ann Powers, and you're going to be able to see her picture from before to after. And again, she is looking absolutely amazing. And as you get ready to go on home, right?
Yep.
Going home. Iowa. Awesome. Well, all right, guys, take care. Have a great night. Until next time, this is Dylan and Ann signing off.